Our final case for argument this morning is United States against Akins.
Good morning. May it please the court. Mr. Akins's conviction should be reversed because the only direct evidence presented during his trial, Ms. Key and Ms. Wood's eyewitness identifications, both of which were based upon an unduly suggestive photo array. The admission of these in-court identifications violated Mr. Akins's Fifth Amendment right to due process.
Ms. Kowarski, there's a large antecedent problem in this case, which is that there was no motion to suppress this evidence, and under Rule 12E, the lack of such a motion waives any request for suppression. Doesn't that end this case before we start it? You know, your opening brief suggested that counsel furnished ineffective assistance, and that was good cause for not making the motion. But your reply brief sensibly withdraws that and says, I know we can't get anywhere on that on direct appeal. We'll save it up for collateral attack. But doesn't that also scuttle this argument? You'll have a collateral attack at which you can say the lawyer furnished ineffective assistance by not moving to suppress this damning evidence. But other than that, I don't see where you can go, given Rule 12E.
Well, you're correct that trial counsel should have and did not move to suppress. But specifically here, we're challenging the in-court identification.
Yes, but Rule 12E says you can't challenge that kind of stuff if you haven't moved to suppress, you know, before trial. Anything that can be raised before trial must be raised before trial.
Well, trial counsel should have moved to suppress the photo array and should have moved to suppress the out-of-court identification. But trial counsel did not know what type of in-court identification the government was going to use until he was at trial. Now, at that point,
surely you're not suggesting that Rule 12E doesn't apply to, say, illegally seized evidence on the ground that the defense counsel couldn't know that the prosecutor is going to introduce the fruits of the illegal search in trial. That's its core application.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting where.
But the whole point under the Supreme Court's cases is that the in-court ID is the fruit of the unlawful out-of-court ID.
Well,
that's the only basis for suppression.
Well, there are cases in this circuit where the court did review an objection or did review the admission of in-court identifications based upon an unduly suggestive photo array where counsel did not object pretrial, did not move to suppress the fruits of the unduly suggestive array, and also did not object during trial. In Funches, this court...
Do these cases discuss Rule 12E?
No, they do not.
That might suggest that the prosecutor hadn't relied on Rule 12E.
Well, notwithstanding whether they relied on it, I mean, there's still the fact that in those cases, the trial counsel did not move to suppress, did not object during trial, but yet...
The prosecutor can waive or forfeit his reliance on Rule 12E, but the rule has been raised in this case. It's the first argument in the prosecutor's brief, right? So we can't just ignore Rule 12E. If you have some case from this or some other circuit saying Rule 12E doesn't apply to in-court identification, even when it's supposedly derived from an unlawful out-of-court identification, it would be good to cite that.
Well, I did cite Moore, and in Moore, this court reviewed the fruits of the out-of-court identification based upon the unduly suggestive photo array, where defense counsel did move to suppress. The district court denied the motion to suppress, and trial counsel objected at trial. On appeal, this court reviewed that determination to allow the out-of-court identification and the photo array exhibit under a clear error standard because it was preserved. But then trial counsel did not object to the in-court identification. And on appeal, this court reviewed whether the in-court identification was impermissibly based upon the unduly suggested photo array for plain error. So I would suggest that Moore stands for the proposition that you can separate out the out-of-court identification based upon the photo array from the in-court identification. Now here, the in-court identification was completely based upon the out-of-court identification, and trial counsel did not know that there wasn't going to be a separate in-court identification where the prosecutor says, you know, witness, can you, you know, it was the person who robbed you present in the courtroom, and he's independently identified. Now, I would say that, of course, trial counsel should have objected at the time that he realized that the only identification that was going to be made at trial was going to be based on the photo array, but he didn't, and I still believe that this court can review that determination for plain error. Also, there was testimony at trial that this array was prepared in an atypical manner, and when trial counsel also should have objected after Agent Weber's testimony about preparing the photo array. Agent Weber admitted that when he typically prepares these photo arrays, he enters the suspect's picture into the database, which contains mugshots of all the individuals who were arrested in the Chicago metropolitan area. He testified that he typically receives 200 photographs from the result of a search of this database and then chooses among those photographs to complete the array. Here at trial, Agent Weber admitted that when he entered Mr. Acox's picture into this database, he received only one result. He admitted that he's never had such a small result, and he also testified that he interpreted this result to mean that there was only one picture in the entirety of the database that closely resembled Mr. Acox. Now, at that time, you know, trial counsel should have objected as well.
Well, I don't know. As I say, I don't know that objection then would have done any good. One reason why this has to be raised before trial is because of the rule, which we articulated in Williams, that without social science evidence, you can't possibly win on this kind of claim. All right? Your brief mentions Williams in passing, but doesn't assemble any social science evidence. How can one get anywhere in trial? The problem in these kinds of cases is that whether a given array creates a probability of misidentification and whether that's irreparable, in the sense we stressed in Williams that a jury can't be made to see what it is so the jury can evaluate it, are really questions about social psychology. And they're difficult questions. I don't know how lawyers talk is a good substitute for real evidence. There was no evidence in this case, and there's none assembled in your brief.
Well, based upon Agent Weber's testimony, I mean, he did know that there was only one photograph in the array that closely resembled him, and once he knew that, it was not reasonable for him to just go ahead and incorporate four.
Just assuming the answer to the question I just posed, which is whether this is a decision that can be made intelligently by people who don't know the social science literature and never tried to conduct any tests. Now, I could imagine a criminal defense lawyer asking for funds to retain an expert who would say, submit this photo array to a group of, show a picture of the defendant to somebody and then submit the photo array to a group of people, see what the error rate was, try to evaluate how probable it is that that error would be repeated 6 months later or at some other time. You know, I can imagine how this would be tested with social science, but without evidence actually trying to do that, where can we go?
Well, I agree with Your Honor that social scientists perhaps would do a better job, but here
no,
we have
that's
to...
Not, the holding of Williams is not that social scientists would do a better job. It's that expert evidence is indispensable.
Well, I'll see that my time is up. Thank you.
Ms. Hickey.
May it please the court, counsel. Maggie Hickey on behalf of the United States. The district court did not commit error in admitting into evidence the photo array and eyewitness identifications, and certainly not plain error. In fact, the defendant not only forfeited, but waived this issue.
Do you know whether there has been any clear appellate decision directly addressing Ms. Kwatarski's argument, at least the one she was making here, that Rule 12e doesn't apply to in-court objections to in-court identification?
No, Your Honor, I am not familiar with that. I believe in U.S. versus Bright, this court did rule that the failure to move for suppression before trial and failure to object to its admission at trial waives the argument unless there's a showing of good cause.
Ms. Kwatarski is trying to distinguish evidence about what identification was made on seeing the photo spread from what identification was made in court. Right? So her argument, at least her oral argument, is Rule 12e would bar any objection now to the introduction of the photo spread, to introduction of evidence that the witness identified the defendant in the photo spread, but wouldn't bar an effort to preclude an attack of this, an objection to the question. And do you see the robber, etc., here?
I understand, Your Honor, but I don't think it's applicable to the facts in this case.
I don't care about the facts in this case. I'm just asking whether you know of any appellate authority on that point.
I do not, Your Honor.
Maybe that because this issue wasn't really joined, you might have a reason for not knowing appellate authority, but that's what I'm interested in at the moment.
I apologize, Your Honor. I do not know appellate authority. I'd be happy to supplement if the court would like that.
All right. Well, we may let you know after argument if we think it's necessary.
It's the government's position that the defendant not only forfeited but also waived this issue. Defendant did not object pretrial to the photo array and identifications as unduly suggestive, and at trial, defendant only made a conditional objection to the photo array without a basis during Key, the victim teller's testimony. That objection was not renewed and was not made again during that the bank teller, the bank manager Wood's testimony or agent Weber's testimony where the photo array was again introduced. Defendant discusses in their brief the context of the objection. However, reviewing the entire record, the apparent context is that the defendant only made the objection to the photo array during Key's testimony and not during Wood's or agent Weber's testimony because the objection related to the defendant's pretrial motions requesting the names and addresses of the other persons in the lineup because the victim teller Key had initially wavered between the defendant and another man. Defendant did not raise the unduly suggestive issue post-trial. He only renewed his motion regarding the request for the identity and addresses of the others in the lineup. The district court specifically noted in its ruling on the post-trial motions that the defendant did not challenge the photo array as being improper or suggestive. But most important in this case, Your Honor, is the photo array was not unduly suggestive. The six men pictured in the photo array are all similar to the descriptions of the bank robber that the witnesses provided to law enforcement and also to the defendant. Photographs contain no unusual physical or facial characteristics that allowed one picture to stand out. Bank manager Woods testified that the robber had very prominent cheekbones, lips, and pretty eyes. It was the defendant's features that made him identifiable to bank manager Woods. The victim teller, Key, also testified that she was able to select the defendant from the photo array because of his physical features and how distinctive she found the lips, structure of the eyes, and the cheekbones of the defendant. And contrary to defendant's suggestion that this was a two-person lineup, the testimony of Key, the victim teller, proves this theory incorrect. Because when a real person reviewed this lineup, she wavered. But she didn't waver between the two people that the defendant is alleging that created a two-person array. She actually wavered between the defendant and an individual in the upper left-hand corner. Key, after thought and deliberation, made a final conclusion and identified the defendant. He was standing face-to-face with the robber, and Woods testified that she watched the bank robber carefully to remember his features. Key wanted to be accurate and remembered the bank robber's eyes, cheekbones, and lips, which enabled her to make the identification. Woods testified that she was 100% confident in her decision. Key identified the defendant as the bank robber just 3 days after the bank robbery, and Woods identified the bank robber only 1 day after the robbery. The photo array was not unduly suggestive, and Key and Woods' identification were reliable. The government asked this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
But there are none. Thank you very much. Anything further on this, Quadersky?
I'd like to address very briefly just 2 points that the government made. First, as the court can see, and I direct their attention to A119, the array does contain 4 markedly darker individuals with different facial characteristics than Mr. Acox and the other light-skinned and or light-complected individual. And
yeah, but she selected one of the witnesses, tentatively at least, selected one of the ones that you would say doesn't fit at all.
Yes, and I think that I mean, Ms. Key never testified that she thought that the original individual that she tentatively selected looked similar to Mr. Acox, and I would say that her wavering between the markedly darker Hispanic individual and the fair-complected Mr. Acox actually simply reveals that she had not formed or expressed a concrete and specific impression of the bank robber before she saw the unduly suggestive photo array. For these reasons, we request reversal under plain error. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Quadersky, and we appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm to accept the appointment in this case and the assistance you've been to both the court and your client. We all have to play the hand that's dealt us. We realize it wasn't your error that's led to these problems. Sometimes the hands just don't have any face cards in them. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.